is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague and mentor, Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, the author of the new book, Noble State, about the success of constitutional monarchy. We turn to the failure of dictatorship one more time with a headline in the Financial Times. The topic here is Xi Jinping, the fall guy, the general secretary for the third unprecedented term, ruling over the Chinese Communist Party, ruling over more than a billion people, and not doing well. The Financial Times puts it this way. China criticizes manufacturers over price wars, deflation fears mount. Subhead, data this week expected to show prolonged bout of deflation in factory prices running unchecked. Gregory, a very good evening to you. What part of deflation did China not expect, given that it's given orders for years to overproduce, to dump your products, to cut your prices, to compete with other state-owned enterprises that were subsidizing? It was a model to create deflation, not defeat it. So suddenly they've woken up to the fact that once the deflation cycle starts, you can't stop it less before a crash, a complete crash of the economy. Xi Jinping didn't do this, but they're blaming him. Is that fair-minded of them? Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, no, it's not fair of them because Xi Jinping had more to do with it than most. At least when Deng Xiaoping was general secretary, he unleashed, if you like, the market economy, he left the market to do its own thing. In other words, to produce what it needed and sell what it could and to buy what it needed. The reality is, though, that the party, once they saw all this money being created, they couldn't stay away from it. They had to interfere, like most bureaucrats. So essentially, we then saw the emergence of Xi Jinping in 2012, and he never made one good decision in the 13 or so years since he has been in power. He's spent his time solely looking about how to protect his position of power and eliminating all possible rivals. And then he interfered in the economy because he took, if you like, the vast wealth which had been created by Deng Xiaoping's laissez-faire approach. And he spent that on the Belt and Road Initiative, which is all gone. That money is all gone now. The Belt and Road Initiative essentially is dead, other than a few people in private Chinese companies, particularly going around the world trying to recover some of their investments. But essentially, the Belt and Road as a political tool to gain Chinese dominance over the global markets, that's finished. And for that matter, Xi Jinping is finished. The Financial Times tries to put it into, if you like, dry, sterile terms, as though that is going to impart a degree of credibility to what they're saying. Look, of course, deflation and the deflationary cycle is there, and it's been obviously coming for some time. This is not a surprise. They say they're waiting now for new statistics to validate these fears of deflation and the like. New figures out of the People's Republic of China are going to produce no new information whatsoever because they're not going to be valid or true or representative of anything. We have known that the Chinese economy has been in an overproduction, or the industry has been in an overproduction role for some time, largely because the party insisted on it. And the party has funded the municipal regions, which have basically, to keep local employment going, have funded more production of cars, of this and that. And we know that these cars are ending up in fields full of new cars, full of new bicycles, full of new solar panels and whatever, because they can't sell them. They are, in fact, shipping huge amounts of goods around the world, but at great expense, and they are not being bought in the countries to which they're being delivered. So this is a crazy cycle. Now, we've seen what deflation can do. Japan has been in a deflationary cycle for a couple of decades, and yet Japan is a country which has made very, very astute decisions about what it produces and how it sells. It really does listen to the market. but it's still unable to get out of this deflationary cycle. So just think how bad it's going to be for mainland China. China is in a massive economic implosion. Xi Jinping is no longer in power. He is now only allowed to make vanilla statements, which are probably written for him on innocuous topics over the last week or so. He is not making any decisions on national security or the economy because he doesn't know anything about the economy, not interested in it. And so the party is trying to gather back control. It's trying to say to the rest of the world, okay, that all failed. We're going back to a China which will be very subdued, very obedient, if you like, to the laws of economics and the deal done between the Chinese Communist Party and the U.S. government recently, done without Xi Jinping's involvement at all, will give the U.S. massively increased control over investments in mainland China. I think it's still risky for U.S. investors. However, it's the best that the Communist Party of China can do to look like it's in control and that a new era has begun. And they'll start to announce this, as we said before, in about August or at the worst in November with the Bai Dehe gathering of elders. And they'll announce this new structure, which may feature Xi Jinping in some nominal capacity, but not as an effective decision maker anymore. He has no supporters. Those of his allies who haven't already been purged have turned against him. So the situation has changed. There's a new China. Unfortunately, from the Western perspective, the Communist Party is still there and will have to increase its domestic autocracy to stay in power. Had the U.S. pushed a little harder, not done this latest deal, for example, not only would Xi have fallen, but the Communist Party of China would probably have fallen within a year or so. It still may, but right now, the Trump deal has given the Communist Party of China a new lease on life.
I come to the military because under Xi, the military has greatly expanded its ability to project power, chiefly the Navy, the PLA Navy, although they're keen on copying the information that allows them to have 4.5 and 5 military aircraft. They're also keen on developing quantum computing, the high-end competition stuff. However, about the military, the sharp end of the stick, you've given me to understand that the military has stopped listening to Xi. Why? What is it that he was saying that they were not interested in hearing? And why is it that they've turned away from him, those who haven't been purged?
Well, even those who weren't purged, and even a number of those who had been Xi allies in the PLA, knew that they were not ready to engage in a major foreign military adventure. Certainly, they were building a naval fleet capable of power projection, along with naval aircraft and the like. But power projection is about prestige and not necessarily the same as war fighting. We saw how good HMS Hood, the great battle cruiser, was in the twin war years when it went around the world showing the flag. It was incredibly impressive, but was sunk in that first major engagement with Bismarck simply because it was not appropriate technology for that kind of battle. So the PLA knows that it cannot engage in a war against Taiwan at this stage. It would be badly mauled in such an act, and that would bring about the collapse of the Chinese Communist Party as well. So the PLA knows that they have to be very careful about what they do. There is a prestige item. They're there to intimidate and to give gravitas to China's negotiating capability. They are not yet ready for primetime war fighting. So that's critical to know. The PLA knows it. And always, all the way along, of course, the PLA has been the one that said, you know, we know why Japan lost World War II. It's because it went to war against the United States. And you do not, under the Chinese philosophy of Sun Tzu and the like, you don't go to war until you know the outcome. And Japan went to war against the United States, and everything fell apart from that point on. So the PLA knows that if it goes to war, there's a high risk of losing that. So it's got to be very careful about how it actually uses its military warfighting capability. And anyway, as we discussed last week, the Communist Party is spending more on internal security than on foreign military power projection, external power projection, because it knows that because of the current situation in the country, the people are ready to literally turn against the party and do so in riots and demonstrations in more of the major cities almost every day. So the PLA also does not want to be drafted into an internal security situation.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs, the author of Noble State. We turn from China and its troubles to the BRICS that include China, meeting most recently at Rio de Janeiro, and a statement by the President of the United States warning BRICS to reverse course and stop the anti-American conduct. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Baxter.